All right. Well, it's good to be with you guys here today. I know a lot of your faces. It's good to see you again. But if we haven't met before, my name is Chad. I'm grateful to be with you today. Want to say thanks to Dan, who would give me the opportunity to be here and stand what is typically in his place. So honored by that, that he would allow me to be here today. If you are a guest here at LifePoint, we'd invite you to take out your smartphone and scan the QR code in front of you or type in lpguest.com into your web browser. A couple of reasons we ask you to do that. First of all, we ask you to do that so that you can get to know us better. There's a lot of information about LifePoint at lpguest.com. And so you can see upcoming events and even message notes that you can follow along with today's message. There's also a place in the message notes for you to ask questions. I think of Dan. I think that's who you'll ask questions from. So if you have questions during the message, you can send a note to him and he'll interact with you there. But also we ask you to go to lpguest.com so that we can get to know you better. If you'd be willing to fill out a guest info card, takes less than a minute. We'd love to make a $5 donation in your honor to one of six local ministries we already partner with, just for you to do something good and kind by letting us know that you were our guest today. Well, you've caught us in a series called Me and You. This series is about relationships. And there's one thing about relationships, we all have them, don't we? We all have relationships. And today, we're talking specifically about parenting. And of all the verses in scriptures, a lot of verses about parenting, but one of my favorites has to be, as a parent of a 11, 5, and 7-year-old, has to be Exodus 21:17. Does anybody know it by heart? I know, put you on the spot. Nobody? Man, it's a classic parenting verse. Whoever curses his father or mother shall be put to death. You don't know that one? It's very popular among the parents, not so popular among the kids, right? In all reality, there's not a ton in the Bible on parenting. Not really. We see in a lot of stories in people's lives and the narratives some good examples of parenting, some bad examples of parenting. But there's not a ton of specific verses that say, hey, this is how you should parent. So it takes some biblical wisdom, I think, to lean into parenting. But one of the best known passages is found in Ephesians chapter 6. So we're going to be there. But before we get there, I want to tell you about the best professional baseball hitter of all time. Does anybody know who the best batting average of all time, the history of baseball? This guy was born in the 1800s. Close. He was the first person inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. And he played for 24 years. And he had the best batting average of all time. 24-year career. Ty Cobb. I know Ty Cobb. Ty Cobb batted 366. Now, some of you, you're like, I don't know what that is, right? That might as well be, you're speaking Greek to me. 366 is the best batting average in the history of professional baseball. And what that means is that when Ty Cobb got up to bat, about 3 to 4 times out of 10, he got a hit. But what that also means is about 7 out of 10 times that he got up to hit, he failed. And he's the best batting average of all time. Don't you wish life graded on that kind of curve? But actually, parenting kind of grades on the same curve. According to a guy named Dr. Donald Winnicott, he's a psychoanalyst who came up with the term good enough parenting. Here's what he says. He says, if you are a good parent who meets the needs of your kids 30% of the time, you're going to raise healthy, well-adjusted, well-attached children 30% of the time. So you and Ty Cobb could be legends, right, at the same time. Just 30% of the time, good enough parenting. So what that tells me, I hope, and what that tells you, is that you can be encouraged that you don't have to get it right all the time. Right? I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves as parents to get it right all the time, to get it right 100% of the time. To be a good parent, you don't have to be a perfect parent. That's what we want to kind of focus on today from Ephesians chapter 6. So here's what it says. Ephesians 6, 1 through 4 says this. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. This passage in Ephesians chapter 6 is part of a section called the household codes. In the household codes, Paul talks to wives and husbands. He talks to children. He talks to the slave relationship in the first century. That was very much a part of their culture, and so Paul talks about that in those household codes. And household codes were not really something that was Christian. It was something that kind of originated in Greco-Roman culture, but it was something that Paul used and also Peter used. We see also some household codes in Colossians and 1 Peter. And what they tried to do was take what was kind of taught in Greco-Roman culture and use it to kind of float the Christian message on it. Some people who you might know who wrote some household codes are Aristotle, Philo, Josephus. That's an example of some of the guys that wrote those things. And so what they did is they didn't so much try to change them, but they did try to put a Christian emphasis on them. Give you some examples of the difference between the two. Some of the more secular Greco-Roman household codes were used to preserve authority, whereas Paul and Peter write to talk about how we need to shepherd authority. The Greco-Roman codes were written to kind of give the father in the household permission to escalate things to violence if he needed to, and gave him that authority. Whereas Paul and Peter write to talk about protecting even the most vulnerable and subjugated of their time. The Romans believed that these codes were kind of central to keeping the Pax Romana, the Roman peace in the culture. They thought if we can control the household, we can control the empire. And so they were written, these Greco-Roman codes were written to really reestablish power, but Paul and Peter used them to help us understand how we need to relinquish power. And this is a very Christian idea that they actually got from Jesus himself. When Jesus talks about authority, he doesn't talk about it in traditional ways. In fact, there's a passage in Luke chapter 22 where his disciples are walking with him to Jerusalem, and Jesus says, "I've got to go to Jerusalem to die." And as they're walking along the way, after Jesus has just dropped this bomb on them, listen to the conversations that they're having. It says in Luke 22, "A dispute also rose among them as to which of them would be regarded as the greatest." This is the conversation they're having. Not "Jesus, why are you have to die? What are we going to do after you're gone?" No, they're having a conversation with which one of them is the greatest, not realizing that greatness is right in front of them. Verse 25 says, "He said to them, 'The kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and those in authority over them are called benefactors, but not so with you.'" Not so with you. This isn't the way my kingdom works. "Rather, let the greatest among you become as the youngest and the leader as the one who serves. For who is greater than the one who reclines at table or the one who serves?" Something is it not the one?
Please try again.
Okay. I don't know how to turn that off. Guess I can turn it down. All right. "But I am the one among you who serves." This is what Jesus says. "I am the one among you as the one who serves." Another gospel says it this way: "The Son of Man didn't come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many." So here's how one scholar summarizes this. Where typical Greco-Roman household codes were required, nothing of the head of household regarding fair treatment of subordinates. Peter and Paul encourage men to be kind to their slaves, to be gentle with their children, and shockingly, to love their wives as themselves. So this is the kind of thing that Jesus is kind of putting things on its head about how we use authority. Jesus is showing us that we use authority not to rule over others, but to serve them. That's how we use authority. And in the parenting relationship, there is this dynamic with use of authority. And that's kind of what Paul wants to tell us. He gives us two guidelines for how to use authority well in parenting. Here's the first one. Parents, or children rather, should honor their parents' authority. Children should honor their parents' authority. Look at back at Ephesians 6:1 here. It says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right." Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. The word children there means little kids. That's what it means. So when he's talking to children here, he's talking about little kids. Obey your parents. Because it's right. This is the way that God has set up the universe. When God was creating the world, God was creating the family. And he set it up to work in such a way as he created it to work, that parents have authority in the family. Now, it says fathers here later on. It says parents here, but mothers and fathers are in view in this passage. It says parents. All right, so parents have this privilege and this responsibility of shepherding their kids and being the authority in their kids' life. Now, this is huge, because whatever a child learns from their parents about authority, they will automatically reflect that to who God is. How they view us, what they see in us and our authority, is how they will view God. To say it another way, our kids' first thoughts about who God is come from who we are. Our kids' first thoughts about God and who he is come from who we are. So we have this responsibility, right, to help them know that however we shepherd authority, that's what they're going to think about God. So it's not just a parenting issue. Parenting is not just a relationship issue. It's a God issue. It's not just about how we relate to one another. It's about how we relate to God. That's why the passage says, "Parent, children, obey your parents in the Lord." This has to do with our relationship with the Lord. Now, I know when we read phrases like this, things like "children, obey your parents, for it is right," we don't always like hearing that it's the right thing to do. I don't know about you growing up, but there were a lot of phrases that I grew up hearing that I didn't love. But what's interesting is I've started using them a lot as a parent, right? One of those is, "because I said so," right? I mean, how many of us said, "I'll never tell my kids because I said so"? And the next thing you know, they're coming out of your mouth and you're like, "I can't believe this is who I've become," right? I was doing some research on this. Do you know the number one phrase that kids hate to hear from their parents? The number one phrase: "Money doesn't grow on trees." And I'll be honest with you, I've used this one too. Because we have a particularly materially minded 11-year-old boy in our household who's always wanting more and more things. And so one day I said — he's also very smart — I said, "One day, son, money doesn't grow on trees. You don't understand." He says, "Well, Dad, what's money made of?" I'm an idiot, because I was like, "Paper?" He goes, "Yeah. Where's paper come from?" "Trees." "Money grows on trees," right? He's grounded now, but he's clever, right? Grounded but clever. And so when you read a passage like this, it said you should obey your parents because it's the right thing to do. It's like you're saying all these phrases that kids hate to hear, but that's what it says, right? That God kind of set things up this way because it's right. It's appropriate. Kids should honor their parents' authority. It goes a little deeper, though, in verse 2 here. We don't just have Paul kind of talking about these household codes with little kids, but he goes on to quote in verse 2 a verse from Exodus chapter 20. Here's what it says: "Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise." So verse 2 here is from Exodus 20, where the people of Israel have just been brought out of slavery in Egypt, and now they are being established as their own country. And God says that you should honor your father and mother. But the audience in Exodus 20 are older kids. They're adult kids at this time. So little kids should obey their parents, but older kids should honor their parents. So listen, when you're little, you should obey your parents. When you become an adult, you don't have to obey your parents anymore. But you should honor your parents. You should definitely honor your parents, but you don't have to obey them anymore. And for a lot of us, this is really hard. This idea of honor is very hard. And I don't know everyone's story here, but I know my own story, and I know enough people to know that not everybody has a great relationship with their parents. And so the thought of honoring somebody who's not just hurt you, but maybe harmed you is very difficult. So there's a couple of things I think that helps us keep this intention in a healthy way. We can both honor our parents while being honest about our parents. You can do both, honor and honesty. Now, for some of us, we want to do honor or honesty. There are some of us that go too far in the extreme of honor, and we just kind of baptized everything our parents did and everything they said, and we haven't really started to understand their imperfections. And that's helpful to understand their imperfections. So we maybe lean a little bit too far towards honor. And then there's some of us who lean maybe too far to honesty, and we only point out the flaws of our parents. We only are critical of them, and there's no real honor left. And I think Paul would encourage us to hold those in tension, honor and honesty. It gets particularly harder to do this as we age because we start seeing the flaws in our parents the older we get. I think this starts around, 13 months, something like that. But it really starts at 13 years, and we start to see the flaws in our parents. So it gets harder to honor them, but something happens. We get a little bit of life experience in us. We kind of come around. I've started having conversations with my parents lately and saying, I'm sorry for how I was and how I treated you, right? And so holding honor and honesty and intention is good for us. Pastor Dean, our lead pastor, says it this way. We need to name things that our parents did without blaming our life on our parents. Naming without blaming. For some of us, it's kind of gone beyond naming. We want to say, you know what, I'm here because of what they did, and I'm stuck because of what they did, and we can't kind of get out of this cycle of always being stuck with what our parents did to us. But he would encourage us to do, name it, but name without blame is the key. So honor and honesty, naming without blaming. Children should honor their parents' authority. That's the first guideline that Paul gives us about parenting. But there's another one he gives us here in Ephesians chapter 6, and that is that parents should shepherd their authority well. Parents should shepherd their authority well. Yes, children should honor their parents, but also parents have this responsibility to shepherd their authority well. Here's what it says in Ephesians 6, 4. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. This is where we get quite the departure from the typical Greco-Roman household codes. We talked about how they were designed to give fathers particularly the authority even to violence if necessary. And yet Paul here says, no, don't provoke your children to anger. This would be revolutionary for his time in history. That Paul says there's a way to parent that invokes something in your kids, that provokes something to your kids, that moves your kids to anger. There's a way to parent that draws that out. There's a way to shepherd our authority in a way that produces anger in our kids. And Paul says, don't do that. Instead, give them discipline and instruction. Now, these words, discipline and instruction, when we think about the word discipline, some of us think about maybe punishment or maybe consequences or something like that. But the term discipline here is actually very similar to instruction. It's really training. They're very similar words. They're different words in the original, but they're similar meanings. So Paul is saying here, no, you should train your kids and instruct them in the ways of the Lord. As a parent, this means that our primary role is that of trainer. That's what you are. You're a trainer if you're a parent. You're training the next generation. That's what we primarily do as parents. That's what Paul says here. You're to raise your kids. You're to train them up in the way of the Lord. Use your authority, leverage your authority in their life to train them what it means to know me and walk with me. And that's what these parents are doing here. The Freyers this morning were doing. They're saying, you know what? We want to do that. We want to commit ourselves to, with our church family, to train up our kids in the way that they they should go. Pastor Jason read Deuteronomy chapter 6, which is a clear picture of what it looks like to train our kids up. I want to read it to you again. It's from Deuteronomy chapter 6. It's called the Shema by Jewish people. It's called the Shema because the first word of verse 4 is Shema, okay, which means to hear or listen. Here's what it says in verse 4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. And you shall teach them diligently to your children. And you shall talk of them when you walk, sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. So what does it look like to raise our kids, to train our kids in the Lord? I think it looks like this here in Deuteronomy 6. When do we do this? How do we do this? All the time. Think about how much of daily life is described here in Deuteronomy chapter 6. He says, hey, when you get up in the morning, train your kids. When you go to bed at night, train your kids. When you're walking along the way, when you're out and about, when you're on the go, train your kids. When you're sitting at home, guess what? Train your kids. So there's this consistency and this kind of constancy to what it looks like to be a trainer of the next generation. And so all the time, he's saying we should do this. Now, what that means is it's really got to be a part of our life, doesn't it? Like if it's that involved, if it's when we rise, when we go to bed, in the morning, in the evening, as we go, when we're at home, it's got to be a part of us. I think what Paul is saying here and what specifically being written in Deuteronomy chapter 6 is that our faith is something that's caught by our kids, not just something that's taught to them. Our faith is something that's caught by our kids much more than really it is something that's taught to them. So the healthiest thing that we can do for our kids is to be healthy. The single most influential group of people on our kids is us. Are there other influences? Absolutely. But the single greatest influence is us. And so we have this opportunity to influence them by our lifestyle. It's powerful. So if we want our kids to be generous, guess what? We got to be generous. If we want our kids to forgive, guess what? We've got to embrace forgiveness. If we want our kids to love Jesus, guess what? We have to model what it looks like to love Jesus. It starts with us and our example. And I'm convinced that this will have long-term, profound impact more than any other teaching that we could give our kids. Our example is what's going to have lasting, long-term impact. So parents, we should shepherd our authority well. So as we think about maybe kind of wrapping things up this morning, this is a slightly lengthy wrap up. All right, some of you got excited. You're like, man, we're getting out of here early. But I want to give you a little bit of practical advice this morning, and I'll just tell you, just so you know, full disclosure, some of the things I'm going to tell you, these are unproven parenting methods because I have an 11-year-old, 7-year-old, 5-year-old. I don't know how they're going to turn out. Right, I'm still on the journey with you in this parenting way, so you can just take that for what it's worth. I don't have adult children to point to and go, look how good of a job I did. Like, that's not where I'm coming from. But I have lived enough and have raised enough kids and read enough books. About a year and a half, 2 years ago, I kind of went on this process of not feeling real good about where I was in parenting. So I read some books and did some work around this, and I really grew. I did some counseling around my parenting, and I've really grown in that way. And so I think I've got enough experience. I've lived enough years. I'm old enough now to where I linger a little bit too long at the closed table at Costco. You know what I'm talking about? Like, I just should I stop too long there? So I want to give you just some advice, and you know, take it or leave it. If it's helpful, good. If it's not, no problem. But here's what I'd encourage you about. Do your own family of origin work. Do your own family of origin work. If you've never done a lot of work around your own story and your own family, what it was like growing up in your household, what it was like relating to your parents, I would encourage you to do that, to do some family of origin work. Some good companions in this work is a good therapist, will really help you with this. But also a community of people that can walk with you as you learn about your story and examine your story and what are really the things beneath the things, why you do what you do in parenting. Sometimes we're passing things along to our kids that came from our family of origin that we even know was there. It's just kind of a part of who we are. So do your own family of origin work. And then second of all, I'd encourage you to focus on cooperation with your kids when you can, instead of trying to control your kids. Try to focus on building cooperation with your relationship with your kids instead of trying to control them. I don't know how old I was or how far along I was in parenting before I realized you can't control another human being. I think I was on an airplane with a screaming child when I learned that, right? There's no controlling another human being. Now, we as parents, we have a lot of authority. We have a lot of way to kind of bend their behavior in ways that we want, but you can't control another person's heart. Even if they're outwardly compliant, inwardly they might be anything but compliant. And it would take a long time to talk about some methods that have helped me, but I want to tell you about a book that's helped me. There's a book called How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and Listen So Kids Will Talk. It's a great book. It's kind of an old book, but one of the best things about it is the daughter of one of the authors wrote a book called How to Talk So Little Kids Will Listen and Listen So Little Kids Will Talk. And she kind of did a next generation of teaching the same things that her mom taught her, which I think is a high praise for the methods. But it's a book that greatly helped me. Of the 6 or 7 books that I read, this was the most helpful for me in my stage of life with younger kids. So if you're looking for, man, I like this idea of building cooperation with my kids instead of just trying to control them to get them to do what I want, there's a lot of methods, a lot of tools in there, practical advice for how to do that. So do your own family of origin work. Focus on cooperation with your kids instead of control. And then choose forgiveness and repair after conflict. Choose forgiveness and repair after conflict. Conflict's inevitable in relationships. It's inevitable in parenting. But what we do after that matters, maybe even more than the conflict itself. One of the best gifts that my father gave me as a child was coming to me and asking for my forgiveness when he was wrong and when he hurt me. It was a great gift. And listen, there's nothing more humbling than asking for a child's forgiveness, but there's also nothing more powerful in their life than asking for their forgiveness. It's powerful. My dad was really humble and he was he is a good dad. One of the stories of kind of how he used some of these methods to get through to us in parenting was with my sister. My sister was a teenager and able to drive. And my dad was a pastor, his associate pastor's daughter. They decided to go out one night and they told my parents and the associate pastor's parents that they were going bowling. But in fact, they went to see Dirty Dancing. They did. Which at the time was really bad. It's like it would be rated G today, wouldn't it? I mean, can we agree? But Dirty Dancing at the time was really, really bad. And so they went to see Dirty Dancing, and so they lied. They said they were going bowling. They went to see the movie. And my sister, she really has a hard time with lying and dishonesty. She says a real clear conscience, which is a great trait. And so she eventually tells my parents, hey, we didn't go bowling. We actually went to see Dirty Dancing. And so she was a teenager at this point, well into her teenage years. But my dad was trying to think about a way to really bring home that what she did was wrong. And so he said, well, Angie, he said, it's been a long time since we've had this kind of conversation, but I'm gonna give you a spanking for this. And he said, I think you deserve a spanking for this, but here's what's going to happen. Instead of me giving you the spanking, you're going to give me the spanking. And I'm going to take your punishment for you. And you have to know my sister, she melted into a puddle of just sadness because, yeah, I can't do it. Yeah, I can't do that to you. And he's like, no, you're going to have to do it. And so, of course, she starts out and she just goes, like that or something. And he goes, no, you really got to lean in here. And so he made her really give him some solid licks. And that was a formational thing for her. So my dad tells his associate pastor, he's like, yeah, tell you what happened. I actually told Angie she was going to have to give me her consequence instead of me taking it. So I made her give me a spanking. And James said, oh, that's a great idea. I'm going to do that with my daughter. So he does it with his daughter. And man, she wore him out. She just wore him out. So you got to know the temperament of your kids before you implement some of these things. But it's a great reminder that I think when it comes to our kids, choosing forgiveness and repair is really powerful. Adam Young says this. He's a counselor. He says that it's not the rupture that really matters, because ruptures happen in relationships. It's the repair that matters. And here's what he says. When you repair your relationship with your kids after there's been a rupture, your relationships get stronger than it would have if the rupture had never occurred. That's fascinating, isn't it? I think that's part of the way God designed things to be, and the way that God has built the gospel into the fabric of human life and relationships. The rupture actually helps your relationship instead of hinders it. Your relationship will be better because of the rupture, not in spite of it. So always go back. Always give forgiveness. Always ask for forgiveness and do the repair work after conflict. One more thing, and then we're done. I've noticed just in my own life and in relationships that I've seen that it's very important that we as parents shepherd our authority well, because there's coming a time when the power dynamics in our relationship with our kids shifts. I'm not there yet, but I've seen it. We have all the authority when they're little, but guess who has the authority when they're older? They have the authority with, are they going to come home for Christmas? They have the authority, are they going to bring the grandkids around? And so the degree to which we shepherd our authority well, I think will translate how well they shepherd their authority later. And so I would just encourage you to think about that, to think about what it looks like to shepherd your authority well as a parent. And then if you're here and you're like, you know what, this is painful for me because I've blown it as a parent, then guess what? You're in good company. If you're a parent, you've blown it. But there's some of you here this morning that you might just really feel maybe you have an estranged relationship with a kid. Maybe there's some tension in a current relationship. Maybe you have a strained relationship with your parents, maybe because of some things in your family of origin. You've not just been hurt, you've been harmed. And so if I could just encourage us, wherever we are in parenting this morning, we're about to sing a song called Run to the Father. And I would just encourage you to do that. That if you've got some harm and some hurt from your parents, run to the Father. And just sit with him and allow him to be the good father that maybe your parents weren't. And maybe if you're hurting because of a strained relationship with one of your kids, I would encourage you to run to the Father. He knows what it's like. He knows what you're going through. And although we can't always be right with each other relationally, we can always be right with God. All right, and he's there for us. Let's pray together. Lord, we thank you that you have given us the privilege of raising humans. And Lord, we want to do that well, and it's a challenge. And we don't always get it right. But Lord, we want to be like Ty Cobb, and we want to get it right to where we raise humans that love Jesus, who follow you, who are well-connected, well-attached. And so, Lord, I just pray that you'd help us in that. And Lord, I pray for the hurt that's in this room this morning. I have no idea what it is, but you know. The harm that's been done, the hurt that's done, the grieving that some people are going through here, the loss that some people feel. God, I don't know any of that, but you do. And so, Lord, would you just in this moment, through your presence, through your spirit, bring healing and hope and grace and peace and presence where each of us needs it. God, I pray wherever we are, you would help us to run to the Father, fall into grace. Done with the hiding, no reason to wait. Our hearts need a surgeon. Our soul needs a friend. So God, let us run to the Father again and again and again. We thank you for the one who made all of that possible for us to run to your Father, and that's Jesus. Jesus.